that my fathers gave me when he signed the Constitution that day. No misguided president or crooked politician with a greasy pocket be spared. When the hardworking man gets tired of your cry, it's gonna rain wrath, beware. Don't tread on me, I'm American free. You're not gonna take it away. I stand up and fight for my freedoms and rights. That's the price you'll have to pay. Don't tread on me, I'm American free. Red-blooded to the core. You ain't ever had a fight in your life like a fight that you'll
All right, welcome to Armed Alabama. Glad you could join us tonight. We've got a good show for you. As always, we talk about your self-defense, firearm and ammo selection, home protection, concealed carry, training, proper range etiquette, and of course, Alabama, Florida, and Mississippi law, and including federal law. And I'm Adam Strange, NRA law enforcement instructor, joined with me in the studio by Matt Green and, of course, the judge, Rusty Johnson. Glad you can join us here. If you got a comment or a question for us here in the studio, give us a call, 251-343-0106. 251-343-0106. You can call or text to that same number, and we'll be able to respond to you via text. Or, of course, we would like you to give us a call here at the studio. As always, you can follow us on Facebook, and we are simulcasting live on our Facebook page. And that's Armed Alabama Radio, FM Talk 106.5. And you can like, save, and follow while you're there. That way you'll be notified every time that we post to our Facebook page or every time that we go live during our weekly show here on FM Talk 106.5.
Adam, you know, today is, for all intents and purposes, the 30th anniversary of the show. We started either the 14th or the 15th of March 3 years ago.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. Golly, the fastest 3 years in my life here. Of course, we have Matt Green in the studio. Thank you for joining us, Matt.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Take your blood pressure medicine because he's going to tell you something that ought to irritate the heck out of you.
And, of course, I just seen you. It feels like last week was the Federalist Society meeting here in Mobile that you host, and it's always a really good meeting, and I always enjoy it very much and always learn a great deal each time that you host one of those meetings.
Matt, why don't you tell everybody what that is? I was pouring concrete in the country. I should have stayed here. Tell everybody what the Federalist Society is, if anybody's interested, and if they'd like to get on the mailing list, how they could do that.
Sure. The Federalist Society is a group of really – it's a nonpartisan group of decidedly conservative and libertarian lawyers and jurists and lay people that believe that the state exists to preserve freedom and that the separation of powers is essential to our constitutional scheme of preserving liberty, and that it's the province and duty of the courts to say what the law is, not what the law should be. And we seek to educate the community through a lot of legal programs and speakers from all over the country we bring here to Mobile to speak to our group. We're open to just about anybody. We aren't just lawyers, but we do have a lot of lawyers. We have judges that come to our events. Last week we had a really interesting speaker, a guy named Peter Wallison, who is a member of the American Enterprise Institute, who has an outstanding new book out called Judicial Judicial Fortitude, Reining in the Administrative State. And Peter Wallison was actually President Reagan's White House legal counsel, I think in 85 and 86, or 86 and 87, actually during the Iran-Contra times. A really interesting guy, but he spoke about the dangers of the administrative state, namely executive agencies that have taken open-ended laws that Congress passes and run wild over the American jurisprudence. And
basically, yeah. We've gone from those crazy cases where you know, a family, what do you call it, a florist type, somebody growing orchids, yeah, has had some administrative agency kick their door down at 7 in the morning with automatic weapons because they've got the wrong kind of orchid growing.
Yeah.
I mean, all that insanity. And, of course, right now we're facing the bump fire stock ban that has not been passed by Congress.
Correct.
And they have just – they've actually changed the definition of the law. I think if I'm correct, I put a link to a debate at the Federalist Society, if not I will after we leave, on, quote, you know, assault weapons. And it's real good. The guy that I guess it was on our side. I thought I wasn't going to like him because he came across as kind of a New York smart aleck at first, but it was very effective in dealing with the other guy. For instance, he said one of the things that these states take as defining assault weapons is a bayonet lug. Now, I don't know about you and but I read a lot of newspapers, and I hadn't read about somebody being murdered with a bayonet on a rifle in an awfully long time. So he did a good job, I think. Yeah, it's posted there.
He was with the American Constitution Society, which is kind of the competing liberal
Well, this was even worse. This man was debating someone from the Brady Center. Oh, and he was just insane, you know. Y'all, everybody ought to see it. It's posted. It's the March 7th, but I think it's posted at the top of the page. And click it, and it'll take it to the Federalist Society. I think it's the YouTube page.
Speaking of which, Peter Wallison spoke specifically of an executive agency basically defying the will of Congress. There was this there was a thing called the Operation Choke Point, which was run by the Department of Justice during the Obama administration, that they passed rules and regulations that threatened banks and lending institutions from doing business with gun groups and also payday loan lenders, when these groups are completely legal and completely authorized by Congress to engage in trade.
The same treatment
that
marijuana dealers get, and you can make an argument, well, you know, they're illegal under federal law.
Right.
But
the Department of Justice did this on their own without any congressional authorization to do it under their rule of regulations, which has the effect of the rule of law. And I think it took the courts to step in. But a lot of times the courts are what they have this
There's
thing.
There's a presumption that the agency's correct.
Right. That's called Chevron deference.
Yeah.
And it was actually done. It was a case that came out in 1984, I think, in the United States Supreme Court. What it basically says, as long as the agency's interpretation of their power is reasonable, then the courts must defer. And I think that's an issue that would make our founders really turn over in their grave, because it eviscerated any judicial oversight.
And I'll tell you get a piece of property that some agency deems to be a wetland, and you better get a couple of $100,000 ready for the fight, or just kiss their boots to do what's right, because you're going to have a problem.
Yeah, I think it's like 95% of the time, if it gets to that stage where the agency's deemed to be, they're going to defer to if they defer to the agency, 95% of the time the agency's going to win. And that can't be good for liberty.
No, it can't. It can't. That is unbelievable, those figures like that.
I mean, it's incredible.
One of the things you're going to talk to us about tonight is, you know, just when you think the Supreme Court is safe again for, you know, God-fearing Americans, then we have John Roberts, who makes a left-wing flip. And in the case is very important to us here in Mobile, Vernon Madison, a murderer who took the life of Corporal Julius Schulte almost 30-something years.
1985, yeah.
That 30, what would that be?
34 years.
34 years ago. He decided, well, because Madison claims that he can't remember, you know, what he did or why he's in prison or whatever, that you can't execute him. And that would be cruel and unusual. And, you know, they've pulled that stuff with the mixture, the cocktail they give prisoners. Funny, go to the American Humane Society and look at the discussion about putting your dog to sleep. It'll say the same mixture and said it's so humane, painless. Everyone should do it if their dog's suffering, if their loved one is suffering. So you could extend that. But remember our number here, folks, 251-343-0106, FM Talk 106.5. Call or text him. We'll be right back.
step up to the firing line. Armed Alabama is back. Questions, comments, and texts at 343-0106.
You smell that? Napalm, son. Nothing else in the world smells like that. I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
It smells like victory. Welcome back. This is Judge Rusty Johnston. Welcome back to the Armed Alabama Show. I do want to thank our good friend and sponsor, Steve Moore, with the Moore Law Firm. They do personal injury cases. They're located at 8 North Dearborn Street in Mobile. That's kind of about a block off the square or so. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Their phone number, if you want to call them up for an appointment, is 251-445-7602. Or you could visit them on the web at Moore Law Firm. That's all one word, M-O-O-R-E, lawfirm.al.com. And I guess I'll throw in the no representation is made that the quality of the legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of the legal services to be performed by other lawyers. And everybody understands that. Before we start with Matt, a lot of you have pump shotguns, and I tend to use semi-automatics, and I tried my Mossberg 500 pump the other day that I even have a recoil-reducing buttstock on it, but I did it with a real law enforcement-grade buckshot, and I commented, about took my shoulder off, and I remembered why, because I normally used what we call low-recoil buckshot. A bunch of people, if you're on if you look at Facebook, you can see it here. It looks very much the same. Instead of the velocity being maybe 1,300 feet per second for a double aught, it may be 1,150. But you can't be sure it's going to operate in a semi-auto. You should, if you try it and consistently does, that's fine. But I tell you, it really makes a difference in a pump shotgun. And this is the Fiocchi, but, I mean, Remington makes every brand there is has it. And you could get it down at McCoy Outdoor, asking for low recoil buckshot. You know, just whatever they have down there would do. And they're on Springhill Avenue, and that is just west of I-65, where the old K&B Shopping Center, not just guns, hunting stuff, fishing stuff, running shoes, clothes. Gosh, what
Adam, they've got it all.
Kind of like the old Sears Roebuck. So anything you need. Well, Matt, one of the things we wanted to talk about is a guy who has had 3 decades, pretty much. And I know some of these were initial trials, but I mean, you talk about swift justice, and I could get the Blackstone quote out, and I think I will while you're looking. But it's been 30 something years, and one of the reasons I remember it is it happened about the time I started dating my wife, and then we got married in 86. Isn't that correct? Yeah, and she's had a 33rd wedding anniversary. I kind of keep
she's in the studio for those who can't see. Yeah. His wife is.
And so that is just absolutely amazing. And the case isn't over. So why don't you give us a quick overview and tell us how John Roberts, now that we got Brett Kavanaugh on, has decided he needs to be a liberal.
All right, so in a nutshell, 1985, Officer Julius Schulte responded to a domestic violence situation, responds to the house, talks with the domestic violence victim, it goes back out to his car to wait, I think on backup, and is filling out some paperwork when Vernon Madison walks up behind his vehicle in an ambush style, pulls his handgun out, and shoots and mortally wounds Officer Schulte. Of course, he didn't die immediately. He suffered for, I think, several days until finally succumbing to his wound. Vernon Madison was tried by 3 separate juries, all returning guilty verdicts. The last time, I think, was a recommendation by the jury of life without parole, but the circuit judge did a judicial override and actually imposed a death penalty. It's gone back and forth through the appellate courts. State courts, first of all.
That'll be the next thing they reverse it on, the override.
And the 11th Circuit, I mean, after it made its way through the state courts and exhausted all his state appeals, then typically they file for relief in the federal court system, and it's been up and down repeatedly in the 11th Circuit. 2 things, though, have really happened that have made this possible, that have been very fortunate breaks for Mr. Madison. and have been disappointing for those seeking justice for Officer Schulte. First of all, there was the untimely death of Justice Antonin Scalia, and with his death, one of the appeals came up, and I think to stay the execution, actually to appeal the 11th Circuit's to stay of the execution, and on a 4-4 tie, the stay of the execution was affirmed because it was a tie. Anytime there's a tie vote, the lower court opinion is affirmed. So the 11th Circuit decision to stay the execution was affirmed because there was a 4-4 tie. Justice Scalia was no longer on the court. Many think he would have, if he were around, he would have voted to overturn the 11th Circuit and the execution would have proceeded. But nonetheless, that happened. And the second thing that happened was there was a recently, I say within the last, I think 2016 or 17, there was a subsequent hearing on the competency of Mr. Madison to be executed, held before the actual trial court. And I say trial court, wasn't the same judge that heard the case back in 85.
Because after 33 years,
yes,
you tend to have people die and retire and everything else.
And part of their argument, Vernon Madison's argument, was is that he had developed vascular dementia to the degree that he could not remember the facts surrounding the circumstances of the killing. Now, there was really no Supreme Court case on that competency issue specifically. So the state has.
You have to be competent when you stand trial.
Correct.
Know that understand
the consequences of what you did is wrong, and that you understand why you're being executed.
Yep.
This is a little bit of a twist in that he knew why he's being executed, but he did not recall. He alleges that he did not recall the factual circumstances. What happened?
Basically, because of his delays,
correct,
and his continued appeals, it's been 33
he's
years.
He's created his own incompetency issue. That's correct. So there was a state expert that testified. There was a defense expert that testified on his competency. The trial court, very thoughtful, insightful ruling by Judge Robert Smith, who gave a very fair hearing and said that he was competent and the execution should proceed. Well, subsequent to that, the state's expert had his license suspended and became a subject of a criminal investigation for dispensing of narcotics. So guess what? They have a new appeal issue. And that was one of the grounds that they brought up before the United States Supreme Court. Well, I think it was a 5-3 opinion. The United States Supreme Court, in about a month ago, reversed the death verdict and remanded it down back to the Alabama State Court for a hearing on their new standard, which they give. And it's really a twisted way. Where it wound its way through the courts. Now it's going back to the trial court, but we have a new circuit judge there now, so he'll have to start anew with it. Vernon Madison lives, and it really – there's a really scathing dissent, which you don't see a lot in these cases, where the Justice Alito referred to the attorney for Vernon Madison, who was head of the Equal Justice Initiative, as engaging in trickery and a bait and switch, and that they argued a legal position that they did not actually preserve for appeal, but that the majority agreed to hear and was used as a basis to reverse the trial court's opinion. But anyway, that's kind of it in a nutshell. And
there's some evidence that even if you believe that he was, having mental issues now, he may have done that from taking drugs inside the penitentiary.
That was actually alleged. he tested positive for, I believe, spice, some type of marijuana, while on death row, he was tested when they rushed him to the hospital, but there were some allegations, and I think there was some proof in the record that there were some he tested positive for narcotics despite being on death row for some 30 something years.
How does that happen?
Well, it kind of shows the futility of the drug war, frankly, that if you can't keep drugs out of death row, where can you keep them out of? Education is what you need. Somebody stupid enough to blow their mind with drugs shouldn't be driving around and probably shouldn't be having children. But other than that, keep the state out of it. But, this is so outrageous because they throw it in kind of to – well, they throw in the Eighth Amendment, cruel and unusual, at a time when people were hanged and flogged regularly. Their ears were nipped off. There were all kind of things that were done to them, and it was all considered proper.
And a lot of the Eighth Amendment's kind of been commandeered by this living constitutionalist approach, where that the Eighth Amendment should be construed in light of evolving standards of decency, and that's somewhat of an amorphous definition.
And that decency should apply to the victim too. That's the problem, you know, and it just doesn't. And you know,
I think Schulte's wife is now deceased. I don't think she ever got to.
It's just awful. It is awful. It just, these things live forever, decades. Absolutely, no question about it.
Once again, Alabama on the forefront of American constitutional law. There,
and Congress could change all of this with. You could do it several ways. One, repealing the Habeas Corpus Act as it applies to death row cases. We wouldn't want habeas corpus appealed. You couldn't. It's in the Constitution. But every death penalty case from a state, automatically, when they've exhausted all their direct appeals, can go into federal court on what they call a habeas corpus petition. And that can – Congress could just erase that. That jurisdiction is made up.
And again, this is not one of these cases where there's serious deficiencies in proof where this not be the guy. Right.
No, it's the
there's
guy.
No, I mean, there's no question. And that would be a much more sympathetic case and reason to review it with such exacting standards. But you're right. It's somewhat – he's profited from his own delay. And it just smacks of unfairness.
I think so. I think if you're going to have the capital punishment, have it. Folks, we got to go to a break. Give us a call, though, at 251-343-0106 at FM Talk 106.5.
Step up to the firing line. Armed Alabama is back. Questions, comments, and texts at 343-0106.
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
And as I recall, the punk didn't feel real lucky.
No.
he didn't go for it. We were talking earlier. William Blackstone wrote commentaries on the laws of England in the 1750s, and
you gave me four of them. Yeah, I've got them.
Yeah. It's a great read, and as fact, Thomas Jefferson said, American lawyers cling to Blackstone like, as they called them, Mohammedans cling to the Quran. But here's what Blackstone says about people convicted of murder. And throughout the kingdom, by statute, it is enacted that, in case of murder, the judge shall, in his sentence, direct execution to be performed on the next day but one after sentence is passed. It has been well observed that it is of great importance that the punishment should follow the crime as early as possible, that the prospect of gratification or advantage which tempts a man to commit the crime should instantly awake the attendant idea of punishment. Delay of execution serves only to separate these ideas, and then the execution itself affects the minds of the spectators as a terrible fright, as the necessary consequence, rather than as a necessary consequence of the transgression. Okay, you could say, well, maybe, there was an attempted assassination of FDR right before he was sworn into office in Miami. And for some reason, the mayor of Chicago was with him. And the mayor of Chicago was wounded, ultimately died. That guy was tried and executed within 90 days. I mean, and I really want to say 60 or 45, but I'll stretch it and say 90. And you can look at the William McKinley execution, too. His killer's execution, it was about 90 days, and he lingered after his shooting. So, and I'm not saying doing it that quick, but... certainly, you can get everything done within 18 months. You can, after a conviction, you can have a special court reporter who's just several that just do real-time reporting. So the court reporter's official record is done the day after the trial is over, and then you have your appeals, and then you know that's it. And you don't let it in. You can have your, if you want to, your appeal now. It's by cert to the U.S. Supreme Court. But not any of this nonsense with the habeas. That's crazy. Looks like we got Mike from Grand Bay on the phone. Mike, how are you?
Well, still got the voice problem. I got a doctor's appointment coming up here real close.
Well,
I'll have to deal with it.
It's been about 2 or 3 months, hasn't it?
It has. And okay. I can't seem to get over it.
Well, I hope it's what you know. Hope it's bronchitis. Something, but mention that aorta deal that I told you my old law partner had. That was very, very weird, and it's something that if it is it, you can have surgery, and you know it would save your life. I doubt it's that, but you know, never know.
I appreciate it. I'll talk to him about that.
What's going on with you?
Got a couple of questions. I've always got ideas about different things people could do or shouldn't do or whatever with their gun situations. But yep. Anyway, I got a couple of goodies today. All right, the first one, if a person buys what they think of as a very reliable handgun, all right, and they get in a self-defense situation and the gun fails, to help them get out of the situation, or do they have any legal recourse against the gun manufacturer?
Okay, buy it new. That would be in your fact scenario, correct? New purchase.
Brand new gun.
Okay. And let's assume that there's no question you could prove that it was the gun just jammed. It wasn't, you know, quite. I think the Commerce and Arms Act that protects manufacturers from, let's say, some criminal, you know, goes to McCoy's and breaks in, steals a pistol, and then shoots you in the parking lot. And then they say, well, you should, McCoy's manufacturer should have had some trigger device on it for safety. I think that probably protects them also. So it kind of cuts both ways. But I will look that up before we're over. It's the manufacturer of lawful, I'll look it up. But they have kind of all the gun lobby got through a special act because they were being sued by, oh, let's say the victims out at Columbine. How did this kid get this gun? You know, these frivolous lawsuits. I think it protects them from that. But I do know that Glock had a lot of trouble with guns allegedly, and this is 15, 20 years ago, that I think they were firing for some reason, and that didn't protect them, so it may very well not. And like I say, assuming you could prove all that, which is always the tough thing.
I got one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and I hate to mention bad things. It was a terrible situation when Officer Tudor got killed.
Yes.
We all know that. But what if, in other words, what if they could have went on and made all the guns be kind of like a smart gun where only the person that bought the gun could fire that weapon?
You know, they've been working on that for 20 years, frankly, and they've just never perfected it. They've never perfected the fact that that it can be fast enough to, oh, let's say, touch your fingerprints or whatever. And then the other problem is, and this doesn't happen a lot, but let's say a police officer's in a gunfight. He has a secondary backup, and a citizen's there. Hey, help me out. Well, nobody else can use the gun but him.
That's,
I mean,
right.
They've been working on it for a long time, but it's a terrible thing that happened. But as I recall, Tudor was not killed with his own gun. The criminal had his own gun.
No, it was a stolen gun, though.
Yeah, right. And that's the problem. They just have not perfected that kind of thing.
Right.
Which leads you back to the first question, as a firearm not functioning to be able to utilize it in a self-defense situation.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his call.
And then my answer for the first one as well is tap, rack, bang. That's my answer to the first one.
By the way, law is Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. If anybody's interested, I'll be going through it. Okay, you got one more for us.
Okay, one more. What if a person that has their gun locked up in their car could essentially snap out a little part from their gun, make it where you can snap an important part of the firing mechanism out, pop it in your pocket, walk around anywhere you want to. If they stole the gun, they couldn't shoot anything out of it.
That's called a magazine.
Well, magazine. Most of my slides come off.
Some kind of firing pin thing or something, you know.
You know, I think the theft from cars, if people would lock them and they would make sure Absolutely. That the guns aren't seen. You know, nobody breaks windows to, hey, what's under that blanket in there? They want to, before they break in, they want to, that's a computer, that's a gun, that's diamonds, that's a mink coat or whatever.
Well, I'll get on off of here.
Yeah, they're good ideas, though. I'll let you know about the other one in a minute.
Thank you for your phone call. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Those are all good good questions and good statements.
Yeah, they sure are. I think, y'all keep
talking. Too many times people leave, they have a firearm for the house and they have the firearm for the gun.
Yeah.
For their car, excuse me. And that firearm stays in the car.
Yeah, or even worse, they're confronted with the no firearms business.
Yep.
It may not even be legitimately a no firearms business.
Yeah, so the person leaves their firearm in the car, yes.
But if you do put it somewhere where no one can see it, if you have to just cover it with a towel, but most people have a glove box or in between, whatever you call those, put them in there and lock it. And, you know, cars now are pretty hard to get into. As I know, I've locked myself out of a number, and it even takes a real strong blow of a hammer to get a window open. A tire tube bounced back and hit me. So, you know, do that. And then, like I said, nobody's going to break open a window unless they know something in there is good. They're just not going to break it open just to look around.
Yeah, a lot of times,
Judge. They move to the next car, you know.
Yeah, exactly. They move to the next car because they pulled the handle on it and it didn't open.
It's like your front door. You know, if you got a front door that's pretty stouty, a deadbolt and all, but somebody next door is unlocked, you know, which one are they going to go to? They're going to tend – they don't want to do a lot of work, most of them.
No.
And most people don't target you personally. They're just out after goods.
Low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
That's it.
They're out shopping. Well, Matt, this case now will come back to the circuit court here, and was it Judge Pipes you said that?
Yeah, I think it was Judge Smith's, Robert Smith's docket, and, you know, he retired, and Judge Pipes is now the new circuit judge in his seat.
And to show you how unfair all this, Judge Smith didn't even try it originally. It was tried by, I think Judge McCray.
I think you're right.
Yeah, so, you know, each judge has to relearn a case.
He came on the bench in the
60s?
He came on the bench in the 1960s, Judge McCray did, didn't he?
Judge McCray came to the regular circuit bench
in 61
or something. And I know
this case didn't happen until in the mid-80s, but, I mean, we're talking about multiple circuit judges and multiple appellate judges. I mean, Vernon Madison is going to outlive them all.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that amazing? He's outlived everybody. So, and he's on death row having his spice or, you know, whatever the stuff is. Want to thank again Steve Moore. If you have a personal injury, like this fellow was talking about, hey, if you have a lawsuit against a gun manufacturer and it is legal, talk to Steve Moore about it. He's at 8 North Dearborn Street. He was a classmate of mine in law school. He's a real good guy.
And Fred's with him, his nephew.
Fred Moore's over there, too.
Good attorney.
And they'll give you a free consultation. Anything you need related to shooting, hunting, self-protection, go to McCoy's Outdoor. I think they're out of those phase plasma rifles in the 30-watt range right now that the Terminator used. But other than that, you could get that low recoil buckshot and really save your arm. And also put maybe a limb saver recoil pad on some of your guns. But we got some time left. Give us a call at Armed Alabama, 251-343-0106.
Step up to the firing line. Armed Alabama is back. Questions, comments, and texts at 343-0106.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. I don't like it any more than you, man.
Back with Armed Alabama, Judge Rusty Johnston here, along with Matt Green and my co-host Adam Strange. Regarding the prior call, we were talking about the Protection of Lawful Commerce Act. It would not prohibit someone from suing a firearms manufacturer if your claim was, hey, you claim this would do X and Y, and I was in a self-defense situation, and it did not do that. Because the Protection of Lawful Commerce Act says its purpose is to prohibit causes of action against manufacturers, distributors, dealers, importers, et cetera, and their trade association from harm solely caused by the criminal or unlawful misuse of a firearm product or ammunition product. So if there were representation, let's just say this firearm fires X number of rounds per second minute, or it it's always an issue of proof is going to be very difficult.
Yeah, or,
but that law it wouldn't be a bar to it in that case.
Would that include rounds not hitting the target fired from the sudden?
Because it protects ammunition manufacturers, so you could probably sue them saying. And I've always thought this is a good one. You know, they all claim the self-defense ammo has more stopping power. And, you know, we've talked about
it. Oh, an express warranty.
We say the one thing that we know it has is less tendency to over-penetrate.
Over-penetrate.
And don't count on it for less stopping power.
Yes.
But I know they advertise it that way. So
they do, but we know that's not really –
yeah, exactly.
That's not really so.
Exactly.
Judge, I got something here. Your favorite organization – just surpassed $500 million in assets. Do you know what organization it is?
It's probably the Southern Poverty
yes.
Law Center and Wealthy Club. Yeah,
yes.
it is
$500 million in assets.
It's unbelievable.
Guess where a lot of that is held? It's not held in the United States.
Oh, it's held in the Cayman Islands or the Bahamas?
That's exactly right. It's the Cayman Islands.
They say it's the only charitable foundation that is in the legitimate list. I'm not talking about some, the neo-Nazi group or whatever, but somewhat legitimate that keeps its money offshore.
That sounds like cartel or something like that.
It does.
You've officially both made the watch list.
Yeah. Oh, if I made the watch list, I would have I'm disappointed. I mean, some of the people on the watch list, D. James Kennedy, I think he's passed away now, but he's very legitimate, mainstream, I think Presbyterian minister in Florida. He's on the hate group list. And what happens is when you get on one of those lists, for instance, Amazon, if any of you shop Amazon a lot, they have a service called Smile, and it gives, 1%, 5%, something like that, of your total purchases to some charity you choose, and there are thousands. And listen, you can give it like to the I'm affiliated with the Abbeville Institute, which is kind of a Southern heritage group, but Von Mises Institute. I'm not sure about the NRA, but there are a lot of conservative libertarian groups on there that aren't labeled hate
and
groups.
Religious groups,
yeah,
like
right.
Alliance Defending Freedom.
But you get labeled a hate group, and you're going to go off that list, and that's what prompted the lawsuits. The only problem I think the only mistake they made is they filed the lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Alabama, and there's a very left-wing federal judge that got the case, and they didn't have to do that. Southern Poverty Law Center does business all over the country. Their hate lists are all over the country, and they could have filed it in their own home jurisdiction. So I expect they'll get some cooking they're not going to enjoy.
Of course, groups like Google and Facebook, they use the Southern Poverty Law Center to monitor content and what
and to kind of screen they use them as a screening
exactly
when they listen. I'm glad we've got kooks like them, and I mean I think that's great, but that's what they are. People say, well, they used to be okay. They came along long after the civil rights days. Morris Dees was the treasurer, if not fundraiser, for George McGovern. I mean, they are a late mid to late 70s organization. They weren't there in the 60s fighting for civil rights. That's just a scam they like to perpetuate. But what they would do, Adam, anytime black churches were supposedly burning at a high rate when Clinton was president, They would send out letters every time a church would burn. Help us stop these Ku Klux Klansmen in the South. And, of course, their letters would always go to New England. And they'd go to widows and people, you know, may not could afford or shouldn't be spending their money on nonsense like that. There are a lot of poor people that need legal help, Southern Poverty Law Center. And I would suggest they ought to help them. There are a lot of people that get defaults because they can't afford a lawyer. And that's the kind of people they ought to help. But not they're in the fundraising business mainly. But it's a shame.
Well, with $500 million in assets, they're doing a daggum good job.
Oh, yeah. No question about that. I just really can't say anything good about them. So, and I can say there's some legitimate left-wing type legal groups that, you know, and that are out there that, you know, should exist because you always need a counterweight.
I mean, the ACLU has traditionally been more of a liberal organization. I mean, now I think they take more of a mainstream approach, but you know, they've kind of abandoned some of their core beliefs, too.
I was going to say, after Charlottesville.
Right.
And, you know, they represented a Nazi group that was marching in
the Skokie,
Illinois.
The Skokie case, yeah.
Which was, you know, very offensive, and it should. And they did it to be offensive, but they took the case saying, hey, that's what we do, the most offensive speech. And so they took the organizers of Charlottesville, what did they, Unite the Right, they took their case. In Charlottesville, won a federal court injunction, and then a lot of their members, backers, whatever, says, you shouldn't take groups like that. They're supposed to take the despised groups.
I mean, there's been a real crisis of conscience in the ACLU, splitting or kind of a schism, because there's those that really adhere to the principles that it's content neutral, we defend it. Speech, no matter how hateful it may be.
Well, and then they spend their time just tracking down the most insignificant religious signs you might see.
Crosses. And,
yeah, when there are a lot of bigger fish to fry. You know, there are a lot of bigger fish to fry. Adam, anything new on the following the Alabama legislature?
Yes, there was actually the governor had signed the Rebuild America Act, if that's what you were getting to.
Yeah. And so, tell us quickly what that means.
That was signed this afternoon. Big fanfare, so I am looking forward to being able to drive on a 6-lane I-65 and all new roads. Just looking forward to that with the 10 cents a gallon gas tax.
Exactly.
But it's more splash pads.
I think the best part of it, though, I mean, in all honesty, the best part of it is the investment within the Mobile port or the Alabama port.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because that definitely is a port.
And if they would widen Highway 45,
45
all the
and
way
I-65.
To Mississippi and connect there with it, I'd let them have 12 cents a gallon. I don't know why. That
well,
doesn't
what about you the penny tax? You're forgetting about that.
What?
The penny tax. Whatever happened to that?
You know, it taxes never get taken
that
off.
That was a remedial measure that would be expire upon the exigency.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's we got a vastly I'm in favor of going back to the Articles of Confederation, frankly.
There goes the Southern Poverty Law Center siren.
That's right. Join us next week. We thank all of our sponsors out there. If you need your air fix, call up Hanson Heating and Air. If you need a burglar alarm, call Hunter Security. If you need some hardware, go see Ace Hardware in Spring Hill, Criolla, or out on Moffett Road. Let's see. Mike Ward's Liberty Safes has great safes for you. And we will see you next week on Armed Alabama. Same bat time, same bat channel.